I would assume it is safe to come into the open. By the by, was my performance of an acceptable standard?
Oscar winning, Doc.
Why, who may this Oscar be, and why should I endeavor to win his favor?
Before and after your time at the same time, Doc.
A temporal reference, I have no doubt.
Gaia, stop talking in riddles, you two. Any other weapons on the Coldheart bastard?
Together they surveyed the paltry sum of J.B. and Jack's trawl through the pockets of the sec men. Murphy's blue 9mm Beretta and a pocket knife from the sec chief and a Glock 17 from the dead guard.
Not usually a pre-dark sec blaster. Maybe another heirloom, like the blue Beretta, kept in good condition. Which one would you prefer, Millie?
I'll go for the Beretta.
Mildred took the blaster and judged the weight in her palm.
Much more accurate over a longer distance.
Christy, take the Glock.
Sure, lover.
She sighted along the snubby barrel in order to gauge the weapon. Jack picked up the pocket knife and examined the blades and attachments before flicking out the one that he could inflict the most damage with.
Hope get better stuff soon.
It left both Dean and Doc without weapons. Ryan would rather that all his team be armed, but in the circumstances, the available weapons had been distributed as well as they could be. He and J.B. switched the H&K and Uzi, as each preferred the other's blaster. Mildred had been a champion shootist in her pre-Freezy existence, and Christy was no slouch. They had gone about the task of distributing the available arms in an unhurried manner, but all the while they were aware of the camera, unblinking, that watched over the scenario as it was played out. Only seconds had passed, but each second was valuable.
Let's move out. I'll take point. We're heading for the armory. If we've got any chance of getting out of here, then we need to be armed. Maybe get our own weapons back.
The companions moved out into the corridor, which was deathly quiet. There was no alarm. No signs of life.
Same as before.
Seems to be Wallace's favorite tactic. Try to give us an up rope for a lynching.
To hang ourselves.
Got any feelings about this, Christy?
Only bad ones, lover. But that's all I've had since we've been here, you know that.
No harm in asking. J.B., what do you think?
Wallace is not as stoop as he seems. Our own nerves will screw us over in this quiet.
An astute point, my dear John Barrymore. The good Jen's apparent stupidity in showing us around was perhaps just the pompous pride and illusion of a man who has had his own way too long. He thinks he is invincible, and so has no need for security within the confines of his own kingdom.
What does that mean, Doc? You mean he's gotten too confident because he's got no enemies in here?
Precisely, young man.
I wouldn't bet on him not having too many enemies in here.
No one added a comment. The atmosphere was too tense for more speech. In the outside, in the mutated jungles and scrub of Deathlands, there was usually some sound, some sign of life. But in here, there was only the oppressive weight of silence, hearing strained to catch the tiniest of sounds, the slightest of giveaways as to what Wallace's plans may be. With no obstructions, they were able to progress rapidly from level to level, taking the elevators. Jack was unhappy about that.
Best to stand on roof, we chilled.
Yeah, but it's the fastest way. I'll take a look.
Ryan gestured to the service door in the roof of the elevator with the barrel of his blaster. Christy moved underneath and cupped her hands. Ryan put one boot firmly in the stirrup she had made and boosted himself up to the roof. He pushed up hard with the tip of the blaster and flicked open the cover. The black maw of the elevator shaft gave nothing away. Unwilling to waste ammo, Ryan paused, expecting some fire in reaction to the movement, if the roof of the elevator was covered. Nothing. J.B. glanced at Jack, who nodded, and flicked open the knife he'd taken from Murphy. With silent grace, Jack vaulted into Christie's still-cupped hands as Ryan hit the floor of the elevator. Before the one-eyed man had the chance to put his second foot on the floor and regain his balance, Jack had lively disappeared through the opening, his white hair flashing in the gloom as his camo jacket blended into the darkness. He was gone for only a few seconds, during which time his movement sounded as nothing more than a skittering on the elevator roof. Just as lively, just as silently, Jack slid back into the car, dropping to the floor with an almost noiseless impact.
No, nothing.
Maybe they expect what we're going to do.
They'll be watching us every step of the way with those damn cameras. It must be obvious. Wallace could lay a trap for us at any place.
Maybe we should confuse the stoop and head straight for the outside. He can see us going, but maybe won't have time to change his plans.
Ryan shook his head as he hit the elevator button for the level that housed the armory.
If we had our usual blasters and ammo, then that'd be a good move. But with all we've got, and not knowing what's on the outside of this redoubt, we'd have to be triple stoop.
Instead of double stoop by going right where he wants us?
As the elevator ascended, Ryan glanced sharply at his son. He was the leader by virtue of his experience and by the consensus of the others. If there were to be challenges, then it was the wrong time for divisiveness, especially from his own son. Dean returned his father's glare with an equally heated expression of his own. Ryan's anger retreated into amusement. The boy could have been him. There was so much of Ryan Cotter in his son that he would have to watch him in a few years. The lad would want to assert himself.
You know I'm right. You settle yourself, son. Heading for the armory is only double stoop. That's one less than heading for the outside.
Maybe you're right, Dad.
The elevator shuddered to a halt at the right level. The levity of a few seconds earlier was forgotten. Split into two, the friends flattened themselves against the sides of the car, taking advantage of the scant cover provided by the control panel and intercom on each side of the elevator doors. The corridor in front of them was empty.
Damn, stoop.
Moving out in formation, falling into position with familiarity, they headed down the corridor. When they reached the unguarded armory, they received a shock that was more jolting than a surprise attack. The doors to the armory had been left open, and after JB had run an expert eye over them to check for any booby traps, Jack made his way inside while the others surveyed the corridors. Jack reappeared with a baffled expression.
What is it, Jack?
Better see for self.
JB and Christy entered the armory.
Well, what can you make of that?
Not worth thinking about. Just act on it.
JB moved forward. The walls and floors of the armory were, for the most part, stripped bare, with the exception of a small pile of blasters and ammunition that lay in the center of the floor. JB hunkered down and poked at them with the end of his blaster, in case there was any hidden trap. As he'd expected by now, there was no catch. The pile consisted of the weapons they had possessed when they entered the redoubt.
What is it?
Expect the unexpected.
Ryan furrowed his brow and looked at Doc, who shrugged.
John Barrymore, as elliptical as ever.
The armorer ignored the comments from outside and concentrated on the blasters in front of him. Ryan's weighted scarf was neatly coiled, and the Sig Sauer and Panga were gleaming, while the Steyr SSG-70 had been greased and loaded. His M4000 was similarly overhauled, and the Uzi was ready for action. His knife was gleaming and freshly whetted. Best of all, his mini-sextant, which he thought lost, was in the pile. He pocketed it before proceeding to examine the rest of the blasters. Mildred's ZKR, Christie's Smith & Wesson 640, Doc's Lion's Head Swordstick and Lamar Blaster, Dean's Browning High Power, Jack's 357 Magnum Colt Python, and best of all, the full collection of leaf-bladed throwing knives, all freshly whetted.
Wallace is up to something strange. All our blasters are here, all cleaned and loaded. Come and get them.
They collected their weapons one at a time.
Ha! My 357!
Gradually gaining confidence as the companions keeping guard in the corridor increased in firepower. Yet at the same time, they were all puzzling over the central problem. What was Wallace's intent in leaving nothing but their own weapons in the armory, all in full working order? There had to be some kind of warped thinking behind it all, but it would have been foolish not to take the opportunity to get their blasters back. JB finally emerged from the armory when everyone had collected his or her weaponry.
Feels better.
Jack adjusted to the change in weight the knives made in his patched jacket as it hung on his lean frame. Like the others, he had discarded the weapon he had acquired earlier. They all agreed with him, but saved their breath, concentrating instead on staying razor keen for the slightest indication of Wallace's plans, whatever they may be.
Remember what the good book says, Sarge. Never shoot till you see the whites of their eyes, or eye in Carter's case. It's all metaphorical, of course.
Yes, sir.
Murphy wondered what on earth the fool was babbling about. He thought that Wallace's idea to let the others go by making them believe they were escaping and then snatching back Tanner at the last moment was a complete crock of shit. The Gen might believe that he was the cleverest man in the whole of Deathlands because of some insane hereditary right, but Murphy was sure that the outsiders wouldn't be fooled for a second. They were too battle-scarred, too clever to fall for it. It galled Sarge immensely that he had let them escape from their dormitory cell, even more so that he had lost a perfectly good man in the process. Of course, the most galling aspect was that they had taken the initiative before he had had a chance to effect his own fake escape opportunity. There was no way that he had intended to put his own man at risk, let alone himself. His head still ached, but not as much as his wounded pride. Given half a chance, he'd wipe out that one-eyed bastard and his bunch of muties and scum, the old fart included. But the work had to continue. The machine demanded a sacrifice. Murphy and Wallace stood in front of a bank of monitors in an anteroom to Wallace's office. The Gen wore his prized .44 Magnum pistol with the 8-inch polished barrel. It was a family heirloom, and spent most of the time locked away in the safe that hid behind a picture of Elvis on the wall behind his desk. It was only worn in times of the most intense redoubt activity. The anteroom was the only part of the redoubt that wasn't covered by a SEC camera. Even the Gen's own office had a camera to survey what went on inside. The anteroom was also the only part of the redoubt that had monitors for every single camera. The SEC operations were concentrated on 3 monitor rooms that had some overlap between them, but didn't cover the entire compound. And now he was standing here, watching the outsiders make their way toward the doors that stood between the redoubt and the outside world. The room was completely dark, lit only by the flickering images on the banks of screens. Third row down, fourth screen along, the outsiders made their way into the frame. Their body language was tight and intense. Wallace's face was illuminated by the screens. His jowls cast into shadow, and the pudgy flesh under his eyes lit almost white.
They're getting closer. A remarkable facility for remembering direction there, boy. It's a pity we've got to let them go.
Why can't I just chill them?
You questioning my orders, boy?
No, sir. Just curious.
Tanner is extremely important if the mechanism is to survive and prosper. The other outsiders could be extremely dangerous if allowed to stay. In order to separate them, it is necessary that the outsiders be allowed to escape. Any attempt at chilling them could lead to a last stand, and the possible elimination of Tanner. This would be an extremely bad thing. Do you follow me, mister?
There was a screwy logic to what Wallace was saying, but there was still a good chance that the old fart could get chilled. He was sure that if that happened, he'd be next. The outsiders moved across one screen and disappeared onto another, third on the right on the next row down. They were nearing the exit ramp.
Go get 'em, boy.
Dean punched in the code on the last automatic door. It opened smoothly. They were still alert, still expecting SEC men behind every door, but there were none. All that lay ahead of them was the gentle incline of the exit ramp, leading up to the reinforced doors of the redoubt.
Too easy. Just too easy.
I hear you, Millie.
Ryan didn't bother to ask Christy what she was feeling. Just one glance told him. He signaled to Dean to raise the door while he went flat to the floor, covering the gap at the bottom of the door as it began to rise. A blast of warm air, swirling with dust and grit, hit him as the door began to rise.
Damn!
Ryan screwed up his eye against the stinging spray and shouldered the stire, ready to pick off any enemies as soon as they appeared. The door rose higher, and the wind became a virtual hurricane. This was definitely a bad time to mount a wreck on the world outside the redoubt. It was about to get worse. One of the side effects of the shift in topography that had followed the early days of Skydark was that many new valleys had been formed. This was one of them. The shifting of tons of earth, rock, and clay had damaged some of the lowest levels of the redoubt, but had generally left the structure untouched. If nothing else, that was a tribute to the skills of the engineers who had designed the military complexes. However, there was one thing that had happened as a result of the earth shift. A small series of honeycombed caves had been formed that had intersected with the air ducts and boreholes that had been engineered for the redoubt. For several years, these had been closed off, but when the air was clean enough for them to be opened once again, the military personnel had soon discovered the uses to which they could be put. Guarded by a set of SEC cameras, they acted as a useful secondary route out of the redoubt for any raiding parties. This had been of particular use when early outside settlers had laid siege to the main door of the redoubt. Although such tactics hadn't been necessary for some time, Wallace was a keen student of history. Murphy cursed this aspect of his commanding officer's personality as he led the small troop of SEC men through the narrow maze of tunnels. The dust hanging in the air was choking and bit at their eyes. Some of the men were coughing heavily, and Murphy suppressed the urge to vomit as the dust caught in his craw. It was typical of Wallace to think of such a labyrinthine plan. Let them raise the outer door, then ambush them from above, making sure to pick them off or drive them away while separating Tanner. The troops reached the mouth of the cave, suspended on a ledge over the entrance to the redoubt. Murphy indicated to his men to fan out onto the rocks on either side. He heard the door start to rise above the howl of the wind. It was a metallic sound as the edges of the metal door caught on the reinforced concrete and steel frame. Murphy lifted the barrel of his Uzi and kissed it for luck.
Fire blast! This is the last thing we need!
Ryan's angered roar was lost in the howling of the dust storm as it hit them full force. JB jammed his fedora firmly on his head and inched toward Ryan, every step impeded by the sheer force of the dust and grit as it whipped around the lenses of his glasses and hit him in the eyes, drying and scratching them.
Can't go back now. Have to fan out and take whatever cover there is.
Right. There's no other option.
Ryan gestured with the stire, and the group moved out with the ease and practice that came with long survival in the chilling fields of the Deathlands. The one-eyed warrior went first, squinting against the dust storm to identify any kind of cover. There was a small hummock of earth with a sparse covering of grass. He headed for it, waiting for an attack from any source. The swirling dust made everything disorienting. Ryan rolled behind the hummock, taking cover and sighting over the spare blades of grass with the stire. There was nothing. Looking back toward the entrance of the redoubt, he could see that it had either sunk into the earth or the earth had risen around it, so that they were in a small enclave that rose at a fairly steep gradient. He had guessed as much from the pull on his calf muscles as he ran.